The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Commodities, soft commodities, hard commodities, oil, natural gas, wheat, soybeans, all of those are in play following the aggression in Ukraine by the Russian Federation. The war spins out of control for the markets, which must adjust. So I go immediately to my commodity watcher and help for the European markets and the world markets, especially in oil. Simon Constable, who writes for Barron's and Forbes and Time Magazine and other distinguished publications. Simon, a very good day to you in Edinburgh. Watching this from Europe, watching this from the North America, it's fog of war. What we can speak to is how the markets have responded. I begin with the question of the markets in London. The FTSE 100, the FTSE 250, all down sharply on the day. What can we say about the commodities, especially food security? The president, in his remarks, was asked about food security or asked about prices in gasoline. Food security in the U.S. is not a major issue, but the prime minister in exchange in parliament in these last hours was asked about food security and said it was vital. So where are the soft commodities? Where is oil? Good evening to you, Simon.
Good evening to you, John. Well, both Brent crude, which is the European benchmark, and WTI, West Texas Intermediate, which is the U.S. benchmark, have both gone over $100 a barrel now. It's a little over 100 for WTI, and it's 105 for Brent. That is a very high price, and people will be paying for that at the pump. It will hurt. That will not be good, and that will hurt particularly in Europe because we also have very much higher gasoline taxes here than does America. So it's going to be eye-watering to go to the pump, and I think a lot of people will probably want to get bicycles instead. On the food front, it's just as bad. You should know that Ukraine is a very important exporter of key commodities. We've mentioned this before on this show. So wheat prices, the Minneapolis wheat, which is the winter wheat that's going to be coming forward soon, that is now well over $10 a bushel. It was just under $10 a bushel or around 10 yesterday. So it's now well above that. That's a very high price for wheat. And then we've got soybeans at $17 a bushel. That's very high too. These are prices that will get passed on directly to the consumer, and they'll be compounded by the gasoline costs as well. And that's because when you think about when you buy a loaf of bread, you think about the flour, the wheat flour that's used in that. So that will go up. But also, about half the cost of a loaf of bread comes in gasoline because it's being sent via truck, and the truck needs to get the fuel, and the fuel costs. And when the fuel costs more, the customers end up paying as well. So this is going to hurt a lot of people. And, big chunky slices of bread may need to be thin slices of bread going forward.
So we're looking at both wheat and soybeans much higher, corn not so much, but this has to do with the exports of Russia and Ukraine now being interrupted indefinitely. More than that, Simon, from the sanctions spoken of in Parliament and the sanctions spoken of in Washington, it's going to be some time before Russia's ability to export is integrated back into the economy of the world. I mentioned commodities again because that's the way markets can adjust to this. In your expectation now, are we going to have a supply problem as well? Is that going to be part of the price? You know, if you can find it, you can pay a lot of money for it. That kind of remark.
Well, yes, if you find it, you're going to be paying a lot more money for it. One of the things that is very interesting about Europe and Russia is that they are attached at the hip economically. It may not be obvious looking from elsewhere in the world, But Russia is a major oil producer. It's part of OPEC Plus, which is largely the Saudi Arabia and a number of other countries, largely Arab countries, but others as well. Russia has become part of that because they're a big producer. And so Europe gets its natural gas and some of its oil from Russia. Now, the oil can be got from elsewhere. The natural gas cannot. And Europe relies on that heavily. Germany particularly has basically turned away from many of its fossil fuels and instead turned to solar and wind, and basically has to rely on gas for the rest. So Russia needs Europe's money for power, and Europe needs Russia's energy so that it doesn't freeze. And this is a big problem, how you cut Russia off and allow Europe to thrive is a knotty problem, and not one that I'd like to solve.
We come to sanctions. You have published in Time magazine that there are debates going on around the world these last months about sanctions and their effectiveness. What is it? What is the general opinion right now? The first tranche of sanctions were from the United States and the EU were aimed at individuals around Vladimir Putin and some of the smaller banks. The military bank was mentioned in the first round. Now the president and the prime minister are both talking about major Russian banks. What is the opinion of bank sanctions being effective, Simon?
Well, this is a very interesting point. To point to yesterday's sanctions, they are timid or tepid, whatever you want to say. They weren't very big. Those today are a bit more there. There's a bit more oomph to them. But the big problem is that for sanctions to work, they have to be able to change the opinions of the ruling class. And in Russia, we have a very divided economy. So the GDP per capita, that's the per capita income in Russia, is about one-fifth of that in America. Most people in Russia are really poor, and there are very few ultra-rich people. Think about the oligarchs, the multi-billionaires. Well, it's the multi-billionaires who get to make the decisions about what the country is going to do, not the poor people, which one person said to me was like they get treated like peasants, and they always have been treated like peasants in Russia. So the question is, how will these sanctions change the minds of people who already have oodles of money? And the truth is, it probably won't. And there's the knotty problem with sanctions specifically to Russia. But there's also a broader issue, is that the US and Western European countries have tried harsh sanctions on a number of countries, and they have consistently failed. So let's go through some of these. So Cuba, which was and still is an arch nemesis of the US, had massive sanctions put on it, and yet Fidel Castro just sat there and was not ousted in any way. He had no incentive, really, in his mind, to change his policies. He died before he could be ousted. That was a complete failure of the sanctions. Then we look across the Caribbean to Venezuela, and you've got Nicolas Maduro, the authoritarian president of Venezuela, and there are sanctions on that regime. And again, nothing's happened. He's still there. He's doing his thing. And we can look to Iran in the Middle East, which has had sanctions on it for a very long time, sometimes really harsh and sometimes just a little bit less harsh. And again, nothing's really changed there. And in fact, one commentator I spoke with Professor Steve Hanke at Johns Hopkins, he was saying, look, when you are the implementer of sanctions, you become the enemy of that country, and people rally around the flag. And that makes a lot of sense. I think about Britain in World War II, when the Germans were trying to starve us out by sinking all the ships bringing in food. We all rallied around the flag. Now, we weren't being sanctioned. We were at war. But the idea is similar, and that's likely to happen in Russia too. This is really not likely to work. I mean, they are great things to put on front pages, but hey, will it make a difference? I don't think so.
in the press conference by the president taking questions after his presentation, the matter of SWIFT, the banking system, came up, and the president's indicating that he's in consultation with his European allies or his allies in general about using SWIFT against Russia. What I understand is that Europe is against it because it would very badly damage your economies.
Absolutely, it would. One of the things is that if SWIFT is shut down, either partially or wholly, it's going to be very hard for the European countries to pay for their energy from Russia. I mean, if they're going to get energy, they've got to pay for it, and that seems reasonable. If you want something, you've got to pay for it. Well, not having the banking system there makes that immensely complicated. And even if there's just a partial shutdown of it, many banks may say, we're not doing anything with Russia, just because they just don't want to get into the bureaucracy of it and have a misstep and then get in big trouble with their government or the US government or whatever. So it's not going to be good. I mean, it could really collapse the European economy, and that's probably why Joe Biden isn't pushing on that. Although today we did get Keir Starmer, he's the leader of the opposition here in the UK, the leader of the Labour Party. And he said he really wanted the whole of SWIFT, the whole of Russia cut out of the SWIFT thing, which, again, it would be like poking a poker in your own eye in the hope that the other guy goes blind. It's just really bad news.
In Parliament, the remarks made by both Keir Starmer's party and the majority, Boris Johnson's party, pointed to the dependency upon Russian energy. And there was one speaker who stood up and was cheered, as they do in Parliament, about the ending the oil and gas dependency on Russia. Is that imaginable, Simon, from your researches?
It's very much imaginable on the oil side of things. Oil can come in tankers, and there are a lot of countries to buy oil from. If Europe doesn't buy oil from Russia, Russia can sell that oil to China, and we can buy some of the oil that China isn't any longer buying. So yeah, that's pretty doable because it can be moved in tankers and in pipelines. Natural gas is something of a different thing. You'll note that prices for natural gas vary massively across the world. So in the US, it's really quite cheap for natural gas still, even though it's more expensive than it was. It's nothing like it is in Europe. So when we have a shortage here, we have to think about where we're going to get it from. And that may mean it needs to be liquefied and then shipped in specialized tankers that are basically pressurized across the Atlantic. And then we can use that. What really needs to happen, and here's the problem, is we either need to drill for natural gas in Europe, which the Greens are against, particularly in Germany, but also here in the UK and other parts of the European Union. How are we going to get it from elsewhere without a pipeline in place? And there's another problem. We really don't have another pipeline. So it's kind of feasible, but it also kind of isn't with the political attitudes at the moment.
Simon Constable writing in Time magazine about sanctions and not a positive possibility for sanctions anytime soon for Europe in combat with Russia invading Ukraine. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
I'm Rodney Williams.
And I'm Travis Holloway. Welcome to the Wealth Break Podcast, a real conversation about finance.
Let's be honest. Building wealth doesn't look the same for everyone.
I feel like sometimes being broke is a cycle and that we might have to revisit that.
And we're not stopping at success stories.
What happens when it doesn't go right? How do you cope with it?
Because wealth isn't just about money. It's about creating a life where you thrive and help others do the same.
Listen to the Wealth Break Podcast on the iHeartRadio app.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall. With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.